I'm here with the questionable Corey Sanders.
What?
So
what?
I'm just kidding. You have like 50 sessions.
I do.
And yeah. I was looking through this.
went sideways.
The program.
The program for the event. It's a beautiful program.
It's beautiful. It's shiny. Mm-hmm. It's and I believe
it's very glossy.
Which session was it that the description was just spot on? I mean, can I read it? Yeah. Where is it?
Go ahead, read it. Read it here.
Azure Compute.
This is the keynote tomorrow.
And cloud applications. And the speaker Corey Sanders.
It's me.
In English. And the description goes as follows. So I want you listen to this, okay?
This is going to be a riveting session, that's for sure.
A little bit from Scott Gu's keynote at Build. And a little bit, this feels like a run-on. A little bit from my two sessions below.
There's nothing below. There's nothing below.
It's the last
that's
one.
That's the last thing on the line. But it gets better.
There's more.
It gets better.
There's more. I believe I have 30 minutes from this one. Yes. This is what the program says.
It turns out, full disclosure, I think this is what I wrote in an email, and I think it was misinterpreted as being the description of the session.
May I finish, though? There's more. I am seeing what demos I could pull from Scott's keynote and redo here.
Very exciting.
You didn't read this over or something, man? You can't turn in good stuff?
We'll get it updated on Channel 9.
Sure.
It's very embarrassing.
I teared up.
Luckily,
I'm not going to lie.
It is in English, so
not
luckily,
gonna
luckily
lie.
It's not written in Spanish like the other intro.
Of course.
So that is quite, and it turns out also I was wrong. I have 45 minutes. So
you know what? What's interesting is that imagine if they would have actually spent time and effort to translate that and then put it in. I would have been like, Corey.
I'm sure someone would have noticed at that point. I'm sure
someone
would have noticed. So,
again,
anyway.
We are taking live questions from
the
audience.
Oh, we are.
We are here in Lima, Peru for Dev Days 2016. And so if you're...
And Donovan just got finished speaking.
So that you're going to hear some people sort of... Hopefully no one will bump into the cameras.
Yeah, knock it down.
Yeah.
So, come in to take pictures with us so they can earn their shoot bucks. Whatever these are.
The cool thing about this is that Jorge, who you saw earlier...
Let's get in on this.
He literally wants the speakers to talk with the attendees and the attendees. And so they come up and they take selfies with us. And it's like, we feel like, oh, we're popular. But they're like, no, we're doing it for the shrewd bucks.
for the fake money. So.
And so for fake money, people are taking pictures with us, which is about right.
That's right. That's about what
it's
we're
about,
worth.
This is how much
it's about
what our pictures are
so
worth.
So I'm signing autographed pictures over there for about three of these.
Yeah,
so that's,
and so there you go. So
right.
Ask Corey Sanders any questions.
Any
you
questions
want,
you want.
And I will pull them. I will look at them and bring them
how
up.
How we doing? We got at least a dozen so far.
Right now we have about
16 or 17 questions. So we'll,
times zero. I mean, but close.
We'll go through this.
Yeah, we'll,
so
go,
we'll
through.
Go through this one by one.
So let's start off with, you have like 60 talks?
I have three sessions tomorrow,
okay.
Each 45 minutes.
Okay.
Yep. And they're going to be fantastic.
Well, let me check.
Are they, you want me to walk through what they are?
Are we live streaming some of them? I hope not. I mean, I hope we are.
This keynote that I think I have 30 minutes for, yes.
The one? You mean the that one that is the a little bit from Scott Gibbs? That one?
That one, yeah. That one we will be live streaming.
Yes.
And
let's
then,
see. Yes, yes.
Correct?
Yes, yes.
And then I have two more.
Yeah. You're on there, yes, at 9:50 tomorrow.
Yep, and then I'm also doing, is the demystifying app development on Azure being live streamed?
Let's see. I think we got you for, we have building apps in Azure using Windows and Linux VMs.
Perfect, that one's live streamed.
And then we have Azure Computing Cloud Applications. Those
so you don't
two
have the demystifying one.
Oh, so let's talk about that.
Well, okay.
So demystifying.
Let's demyst this sucker.
First, let's start out with what you work on so everyone can get a context.
Sure, sure, sure. So my name is Corey Sanders. I am the head of product for compute in the Azure team. So what that means is I'm responsible for infrastructure as a service. So this is virtual machines. I'm responsible for the container service and containers in Azure. I'm responsible for Service Fabric, so
okay.
That's the microservice-based platform. Mm-hmm. I'm also responsible for event hubs and service bus in my team. What else do I own?
And then you clean out the bins and the garbage.
Cloud services, and then I clean out the bins for my team. Yes, thank you. Very kind of you. So I actually have been working on infrastructure service for a while, and I have both the Windows and the Linux side of the house. So I have those two teams, and we keep them separate. We don't like to mix.
It's like, okay, everybody, the Linux people are coming out. So Windows people,
stay in your office, please. Wait for the Linux people to come through.
So here's my challenge. I'm a developer. I've come from a developer perspective.
That's a show.
So let's pretend I come from the developer perspective.
Okay, let's assume you've done this one.
There's so much choice out there. Uh-huh. Like, how do I know when to use this versus this versus that?
It feels like you should come to my demystifying app development in Azure session.
This is a great segue. It's like I'm a trained professional.
Perfect. So what I'm going to do in that session is talk a little bit about the sort of approach the platform based on what are you trying to accomplish? And I don't really want you to answer because I know nothing from your perspective.
Yeah,
that's right. I want to get my cat site up.
Yeah.
But it comes down to what are you trying to accomplish? And I've sort of broken down the types of accomplishments into categories. So let's say you want to do a lift and shift project. You want to move apps from an on-prem environment into the cloud. Then we've got virtual machines, and that's going to be fantastic for you. Let's say you want to do something a little bit more scale out, something a little bit more, but still really deep in the virtual machine, really deep on the system. Then we have scale sets, and sort of up we go in the stack. And so based on what you're trying to do, if you want to do web and mobile-based applications, we have App Service, and you can go and build with that. Microservices, we have Service Fabric, and you can go build with that, and so on.
Is there like a choose your own adventure, like Azure novel,
where I can go to page four?
Oh, it's like, okay, you are at this juncture. You need to now use scale. I mean, that's kind of a funny thing, but is there a way for me to know, like, I have this website that I like to show my cats on.
Yes.
Is the immediate thing to do always just to lift and shift into a VM?
Oh, no.
Or is better? Does it depend? How do you know?
It depends very much on sort of what the nature of your app is.
Okay. Right?
And I will actually go into some detail on this tomorrow. But, you know, if you're approaching your app and it's really just a simple website and maybe some search aspects, like maybe you're searching for sort of self-help books on I'm too connected
hygiene
to my cat.
Hygiene.
Yeah. Hygiene and I smell like my cat.
Sure.
I mean, this is maybe a real world scenario.
I mean, let's pretend it's a real world.
A friend. A hypothetical friend named Seth who smells like a cat.
But not this Seth.
Not
of
this
course.
Seth, yeah. Of course. So anyway, you know, if you come in and you say, look, I just want a website and I want to get going fast and I want agile DevOps experiences with that website, right? Then, look, I got an answer for you, right? You can come in, you can use web app service, and away you go, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of like a choose your own adventure type thing.
Right.
If you're like, no, look, I've already got a website. It's using SQL Server, or it's using Oracle, or it's using, you know, MySQL on a VM in the back end. And, you know, I'm also running on, let's say, Apache or IIS or Nginx or something, right, as my front end. And I want to move that into the cloud quickly because I want this agility. I don't want to buy my own hardware. VMs or VM scale sets may make more sense for you, right? Maybe even going straight to container service may make more sense. So it really depends on what app you're working on, where you're starting from, and then how you're going to move.
So you're saying, like, if you just want to, like, lift your thing out and shift it somewhere else.
It's like you got it right now and you just want to go. The fastest way is going to be VMs. Uh-huh. If you're building a new app, it's pretty rare that I'd say, yeah, start with VMs. There's typically a lot of other services that I'd propose first.
So, I mean, that's all good and well, right? Because you're saying that you have your app, you can just literally take that and put it into a VM.
Yes.
And you're done. But if you're going to go...
Figuratively, but yes.
Literally according to the Oxford Dictionary.
Okay.
Literally.
Okay. I mean, you learned that from me last night.
Yeah, I did. I wanted to say Oxford and dictionary.
He wanted to say just Oxford today so he would feel more intelligent.
Yeah, and it's
and distract
working.
From the fact that he smells like a cat.
No, my friend. The friend. That
the friend said.
So now...
Smells like a cat. I'm distracted by what's happening.
Now that I know I could just take my app and put in a... when is the case that I should really consider... You know, instead of just lift and shift, maybe I should re-architect into app service, for example.
Yeah, totally.
How do I make that choice?
Yeah, it's a complicated choice, very personal choice. But it typically has to do with, you know, what you're trying to do with your app in the future. You know, I think if there are a lot of customers who lift and shift and they're not going to make a lot of changes to their app, they're pretty happy with how they are, or they just don't really feel like making changes, they don't have a developer, so they want to go and leave it alone, then, you know, maybe you just leave it. right? But if you're like, look, I want to go move into cloud, but then I want to get this new DevOps thing I've heard so much about. I want to go agile, update, change. You know, it's hard to do that on a lot of VMs, right? You can do it, you can make it work, but in that situation, gosh, maybe App Service makes a lot more sense for your web components, right? Mm-hmm. You're gonna go make a lot of iterations, make a lot of changes, that may make more sense. Maybe you wanna add some additional support around the platform.
Right.
So, you know, one of the things I'll talk about tomorrow, both in the keynote and then in the demystifying session, is Azure Functions, which is a cool new technology we've got, event-based.
It's like a cloud cron job.
You got it.
I wanted to say cron job.
You
too.
Just are really smart today.
Thank you.
It's really intelligent stuff coming from this general.
There's some coming here.
There's some aura of intelligence that are.
Azure Functions just came out at
Build. Yeah, a couple weeks ago. So I'm going to be talking about. I'm going to show a demo of that tomorrow. It's going to blow your mind, my man.
But here's the thing, like, it feels like you can lift and shift.
Yes.
If you just want to, let's just move it all up to the cloud, and there's obvious benefits to doing that.
Go.
But then if you are sort of an agile, sort of moving your code forward very fast, you feel like there's going to be some work that has to be done to just not do that.
You got to choose how you want to make those changes, right? The other option, of course, maybe you're like, look, I've got this big complex app that's built on virtual machines, and I want to move to a more microservice model, right? I've heard about this approach to microservices. Mm-hmm. I've heard about the opportunities that if I built a microservice solution, I can be very, very agile, right, but still scale out really mm-hmm. big. Then maybe you start reworking portions of your app to something like Service Fabric, right? And so then you can start looking at building out sort of a full microservice solution. So it really comes down to, I think, two things. One, what does your app look like today, right? Is it brand new? Is it something existing? And that'll kind of guide your first step.
Got it.
And then what are you going to do with it? Right? Are you planning to scale it out? Are you planning to go to multi-region? Are you planning to just kind of, you know, let it alone? Then that'll decide your next step, right? And then you can take it from there.
So there's an interesting sort of notion now, because I've talked with Rusinovich about Service Fabric. I've talked to Snover about treating your computers like cattle.
Yes.
Right? So for a developer, usually we would just have, there was this code and we'd throw it over the wall to, you know, sue IT person. And then she would get mad at us because it didn't work, but it was really her fault, you know, because she didn't set up the machine right, you know, because my machine, it works. My machine, it always
works. You really went after IT pros right
now. No, I know.
I do not condone this attitude towards IT pros.
What I'm saying
is just a precursor to this.
It's a bad developer attitude, okay?
Okay?
I am owning it.
I agree with that.
For all developers that agree with my bad developer perspective, how do we sort of fix that sort of the glue between the two, because you're obviously in between those areas.
I'm sure when
you're cleaning out the bins of the developers,
I can read their docs. I can read their docs about this.
Absolutely. So how do we grease those wheels there?
Yeah. So there's a few options actually, and Donovan's live stream right before this on DevOps was actually perhaps a good video to go kind of see that.
Which we'll put up live later.
And I'm distracted because Donovan's walking by in front of us. Hi, Donovan. Nice job in your session.
Oh, it was beautiful. I cried. It was.
I laughed, I cried, it was joyous. Are we still filming?
Yeah.
Okay,
we are.
We're still on, excuse us. Anyway, so it's a good topic to talk about, sort of that DevOps approach and sort of how do you sort of marry this desire for agility with this need to still have some control in your environment.
Right.
This need to sort of lock down your environment, make sure that you are living up to the policies and expectations that the principals of your IT department need to require, right? For whatever the reasons, compliance or for security reasons or so on. And so a lot of DevOps tools that we have, VSTS, to be able to do some of these things. We also, of course, have integration with things like Jenkins to be able to manage some of these things. But you know, one of the biggest tools that we're seeing really take off in this world is containers.
Right.
And containers is a really exciting technology that I think pushes forward DevOps in a very dramatic way. And the reason for this is containers allows the developer to build in this environment, and I'll actually show this tomorrow, on their dev box, build exactly how they want it, and then the IT pro system administrator can deploy it without touching anything the dev did, and the IT pro system can still manage the infrastructure, and the app just deploys. And so you've suddenly built a very clean separation. You see how it's clean separation?
Yeah, I see it.
You can see it right here.
Yeah, it's clean.
Between
I mean, it's the really, IT,
very, like it's really clean.
Yeah.
Between the system administrator and the developer. And that's how the container story, I think, is really taking off from a DevOps perspective because of that separation, because it's a fully isolated environment, but spins up like lickety-split.
And the thing about the developer is we can no longer say, works on my machine, because you're effectively describing what the machine is.
Correct. if it works here, that Docker container will work here.
And it's unfortunate for us because now we can never
say. You can't blame people incorrectly any longer.
But that also changes the way a developer thinks about software and develops software,
it's
right?
It's fantastic.
I know it's fantastic, but what? Let's just say someone's hearing
you own your environment now without having to own the system administrator's environment. It's fantastic.
How does that change sort of my development process or my development thinking? Does it, or does it just an extra thing I have to think about?
I think it offers an opportunity to speed everything up. So I think that's really the key. And so that does require you to rethink some things as you approach the development model. Sort of what does it mean to speed things up? When do I want to speed things up? When do I not? The ability to deploy containers across your environment and within seconds have all of them updated is both an incredibly empowering and incredibly scary concept all at once, right? The ability to go in with production and just sort of wipe the whole thing out, it's something that needs to take some careful thought. And this is where I do think containers are very, very exciting, but they need to be approached with the right level of care.
So what would you say to a developer, because you, like, look, I love the way we talk about stuff and we talk about care, we talk about these are exciting, but I'm a dev, I want to understand how my code is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
How do I need to change my thinking if I'm going to containerize my application?
I don't think there's a lot of thinking that you need to change to containerize your app, right? I think the nice thing about this is because it simulates that underlying OS, you don't have to really care, right? That's actually part of the value. You get these environments that are clean, you get them to recreate multiple times, they spin up lickety-split, you don't have to necessarily go rebuild your app, rebuild your mental model. None of that has to change because you're not writing to a new form, you're just writing to the OS.
So I'm thinking of containers as more lightweight than a VM, right?
Oh, yeah.
So they're more lightweight. Does that mean I'm not going to put my full stack in a container?
Well, so there's a lot of ways that people approach containers, okay?
Okay.
And so you can approach containers exactly what you should. You could put your whole stack in a container, right? You could actually build your entire solution there.
But would the container people sort of like be
frown
like,
oh, jeez, you don't get it.
That's not right.
You don't get it,
would
Seth.
Would they frown at
cat,
us for cat that?
Catman Seth. No. And I think, so here's, and this is the difference that I like to point out. There is a difference between containerization and microservices.
Okay.
Now, microservices don't strictly require containers, but they will almost certainly always use containers moving forward.
Right.
Simply because containers make a very nice model for microservices.
Sure.
But containers don't have to be microservices. The containers can be completely
Whatever.
Separate. Right. And so the key difference here is that microservices are a defined, you know, size, single function capability that maybe is contained in a container, but its role, its job, its development object is that single function, and then you put those together to make your app, right?
I see.
And so that is really the new thinking that's required from development models, is when you move to this microservice model, you take these monolithic solutions, this, you know, big front end, this one front end solution, and you start splitting it up to make those individual, isolated, independent roles that talk to each other in a fully defined mechanism. Okay? And so that is really the change that needs to happen. Now, is that required to use containers? No. You can still use containers. You can actually manipulate, deploy containers for a lot of your DevOps solutions, even for apps that are monolithic.
Mm-hmm.
But the microservices model really gives you that scale out and that agility that sort of containers are promising, right? And
I
so
see.
You get a lot more of that agility and that flexibility using containers in a microservices way than just using containers. Period.
Awesome. So we started with lift and shift VM. We talked about containers and how you could treat it like a VM.
You could.
But you're saying that there is this sort of new architecture, microservices, that lends itself well to containerization.
It does.
So we have VMs. We can do containers on Azure, right? Do we have a container service or something?
We do have a container service. Oh. I will be demoing this in my keynote tomorrow as well.
Oh,
the
cool.
Azure container service, it just went GA. Actually, this week.
What?
Hmm.
Is this an announcement live?
Well, it's not. I mean, preview Tuesday. So
this isn't live stuff.
This. I mean, this. Well, this went
take
GA.
This take this down,
take it down,
guys. Come on.
It's all.
Oh my gosh. Take this down. You didn't wait to come to Lima and tell everybody.
No. So it went GA this Tuesday.
Awesome.
So it just went GA.
Because I remember when it went beta at the last AzureCon. I think it went.
That's right.
Okay.
And so what this again, and what this offers is, you know, when you put together the container service and you put together these microservices offerings, it does enable pretty much anyone to go in there and build these great applications, right? So you don't have to learn a lot. You don't have to be a big corporation to go write these applications. You can actually write them to these models, to these services, whether you're small or big.
Right? Got it.
And we like to use the word democratizing.
Oh.
Application development.
So speaking of container services,
yes.
Let's get specific. What kind of containers can you put in there and how are those managed? I know you're going to show us a little bit, but maybe give us a taste for
how. So we have two different options, and this is one of the cool things about what we've done with the container service. We've chosen flexibility and choice as sort of a top priority for it.
Awesome.
So what this means is, one, we're actually using only open source components. So it is using DCOS, which is a recently announced product from Mesosphere.
Okay.
And so that's a combination of Apache Mesos and some of the Marathon technology.
Okay.
So it's called DCOS, awesome technology. Fully open source, and that is in a partnership with Mesosphere. And then we also use Docker Swarm, and that is fully open source as well. And we offer the choice between these two, which is just really fun because it means, first of all, they're both fully open source, which means you could go and take those and deploy them somewhere else, right? So if you're like, hey, I like this, I use it, but I'm going to go to another, let's say another cloud, probably not, but if you wanted to, you could, and those fully open source, just take it and you go, right? And you get to choose in Azure between these. So you get to choose whichever one you like, whichever one you're comfortable with. So.
And these container services manage sort of like the life cycle of a container.
Exactly right. So a life cycle, the scale out, it's sort of a visual experience. You can go in and manage the growth and deployment, and it will effectively orchestrate this on top of your running virtual machines.
Got
so it.
So
it basically
Or
takes,
you mean containers or virtual machines.
So the containers are orchestrated on top of the virtual machines running in Azure. So they all sit on top of scale sets underneath, which are virtual machines in the Azure platform.
I see. So you have it manages the virtual machines.
It does.
Because say there's like five containers running in one device.
Okay.
And one starts taking a lot of CPU, then it'll just scale out to another.
It'll fix it. That's right.
And I don't have to do anything.
You don't have to do anything, which is actually perfect for you because you are a very lazy person.
It's come out here. We'd have to come all the way to South America for everyone.
Well, I think we noticed just by the lack of cleanliness.
Yeah. Well, no, that's my friend who's
making
the website.
Who smells like cats.
Yeah. So now that we've talked about virtual machines, containers, the orchestration of containers using Mesosphere and Docker Swarm.
We talked about Service Fabric.
Let's move over to Service Fabric.
Oh, is it the same? You want to dig in a little bit more?
Let's dig in a little more. Is it the same service but ours, or what is it?
Great question, Seth. So when we look at the difference between sort of a container service like DCOS, right, which is growing a lot of popularity, and then Service Fabric, which is more of a microservice platform, sort of the way to think about the difference here is the container service is very composable. So you can go in and it's actually, because it's an orchestrator, it actually decides where to place things and sort of exactly how to deploy them onto virtual machines. It's very, very easy to go pick whatever you want and deploy it on there.
Right.
Right? So if you're like, I want Kafka, go. Done, right? Just like that, you can go and deploy, right? I want Zookeeper, done, right? Like, you know, just very, very composable, pick what you want and go.
Got it.
Service Fabric, on the other hand, is much more prescriptive, right? And so you can, you know, depending on who you are and depending on sort of your development background, that may be good or that may be bad,
sure,
right? And so with your Service Fabric, it's got a runtime that you write to, and you effectively, prescribe to the Service Fabric model to be able to deploy your microservice solution. Now, what this offers, is that if you use the Service Fabric health model and you use the Service Fabric deployment model and placement model and leader election model, it enables you to do a lot of great stuff. So you can do now, first of all, leader election with stateful services. You can do coordinated update and then automatic rollback based on health. Right, and so something fails, one of your microservices gets updated, it will automatically roll back and nothing else gets impacted.
Interesting.
Which is very, very powerful. And that comes with, you prescribe to the model and you can get those benefits. Right, and so this is kind of when I look at the difference between the two, that sort of, and it's awesome that we have both. And
yeah.
I'm actually one of the only providers that has kind of both of these models available. And you know, you can pick and choose. Now, Service Fabric, today is Windows and .NET, and we do have a preview of Linux available.
Okay.
We also have a preview to be able to take the Service Fabric bits and deploy them on-prem or in other clouds, which is super cool. So you can go, and we actually do have folks who have deployed elsewhere, and so it's very good. And then the container service today is actually Linux only.
Okay.
But we will be adding Windows support to that as well.
So the cool thing is, I'm by the way, we're taking questions, and I sort through the questions, so please send them in. It feels like the container service is stick shift, Azure Service Fabric is like automatic.
Automatic. That's a great way to put it. And there are people who like one versus the other. And we're pretty excited to be able to offer both. Yeah, it's really great.
And so I talked to Rasinovich about this earlier. The way that Service Fabric was architected or created was just by necessity from the other services you already have.
Services. Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, we've had Service Fabric inside the system for a good 5 years.
Yeah.
And the team was working on it for a couple years even before that. And it runs things like DocumentDB. It runs things like SQLDB. It runs our front-end API infrastructure. And so, actually, the front-end APIs that accept all the compute, storage, networking calls, it used to be a monolithic application. We rewrote it to be a microservice application using Service Fabric. And so it allows us to, one, scale more globally, easier, and also update it in a very, very agile way without risking taking it down.
And you also had to suffer through the distributed systems aspect to know how to build Service Fabric properly.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's aspects of this that we have, I think, a lot of good help, documentation, and so on to help you get through that. But it is a challenge. You should not go in lightly to a rewrite of a monolithic app to a microservice app, no matter what platform you use, no matter where you go, no matter even you use a third-party solution, right? Because we do actually have great support from third parties for PaaS solutions like OpenShift and Cloud Foundry. Wherever you're going, it does take some thought. Right, and so you do want to go in with thought, which
thing about it is, you're saying, like, Service Fabric is battle tested because we've implemented it 5 years ago, and it's taken all the hits.
That's right. That's right. I mean, we found a lot of bugs over 5 years of running some of our most resilient most intense services in the platform. I mean, SQLDB is a very intense service with the amount of throughput that's required, the amount of reads and writes that are going on it. Skype for Business, very intense workload, also running on top of Service Fabric.
Wow.
So some really, really cool stuff. And we just learned so much from that, DocumentDB as well, which of course has now a Mongo head to it, which is cool.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. All right, so we went VMs.
We're going all the way through, man. This is like my session. I don't need to give my session anymore.
Hey, you're done, dude.
Done.
Let's go have some
peace.
Let's go have some ceviche.
Some ceviche. And some pisco sours.
Apparently it's a big thing.
A very, very popular drink. So, I will work those into a couple of my sessions tomorrow.
Nice. So now that we've talked about sort of microservices from a architecture perspective, as far as how the thing is set up.
Yep.
As a developer, how should I start to think of these things if I want to move in this direction?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the biggest thing is to again be conscious over how you're approaching the platform,
okay.
Right? So if you're like, look, I know that this needs to be a microservice application model. I've already got a monolithic model. The recommendation is always to find the thing that's perhaps the most important to be a microservice approach, right? So some of the best examples that we've seen is, you know, we've got a great model from a company called TalkTalk. And they've got a streaming video service that runs on top of Azure, mm-hmm. in the UK. What they've done is they effectively have this queuing system in the middle. So they're doing jobs, right? They're doing media transposing of jobs, right? Making different sizes and different formats.
Which
and so on.
Media is hard. So I mean, it's like
hard.
There's a lot of bits
and
there's a lot
of stuff happening.
Yeah.
And so what this queuing system does, it's basically built on Service Fabric. It uses, you know, the other parts of the platform, media services and app service and so on. But this uses Service Fabric for the queuing system. And that's because that's one of the hardest parts of their platform, because, you know, if you start using different queues and different technology points, you start having locks in the system and who's talking to whom and blah blah. So now when you do stateful compute and local, you can end up basically simplifying that development model. So you're suddenly like, great, that's the place I'm going to use microservices, and I'm going to go deep in there. The other parts maybe I'll wait on, right? And that's kind of the best approach that I'd always recommend for this type of movement.
That's
find the parts that make the most sense and are the most important to get right.
Because it feels like sometimes as developers, we're trying to kill a fly with a shotgun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that my cat website, my friend's
cat
website, you don't need the shotgun approach. An Azure web app is just perfectly good enough.
Oh, it is, absolutely.
But there are others, like, for example, if there are other people out there that smell like a cat, like my friend, and that want to submit pictures or want to, all of a sudden you're getting into an aspect of that application that becomes needs to be more resilient, needs to be more reliable, needs to be more scalable.
Yeah, well, and let's be clear though, I think you know, web apps and app service is resilient, reliable, and scalable, right? But it's very focused on the web portion of the service, right?
So I like it.
Really when you look down at something like Service Fabric versus web app, right, if you're making a website, even a huge, gigantic website that scales out like crazy, jet.com runs on top of web apps. I mean, that's a huge scale e-commerce website, right? Big. You know, that's great. I definitely want to continue using app service in that environment. But if you start building a much more complex app, you know, you could even put app service on top of Service Fabric, right? And integrate with that. Service Fabric can be the under component for the queuing system, and that's sort of like what TalkTalk does. So really, when you look at sort of the complexity of your app, sort of the needs that you have for scale out, the ways that you're handling data, the ways that you're handling response to customer demand and expectations, that's where you start seeing, gosh, maybe Service Fabric makes more sense, or microservice architecture makes more sense to be able to manage the updates and agility of that complex of an application.
And I like how you're saying this. It's not like, hey, you know, let's just okay, everybody, we're coming in this weekend and we're microservicing all the things into Service Fabric tomorrow, this weekend.
That's right.
No one's going home until it's, you don't have to
stay here and, no leaving.
That's right. It's literally, you're saying, find the portions of your application where it makes sense. And if it doesn't, it's okay.
That is literally what I'm saying.
Oh my goodness. This is literally what
That is literally what I said.
So let's go move on, because we went from like VMs to containers to container services to
service. We're running full range, my man.
I know. I'm a full range kind of guy.
This got personal.
Let's get into Azure Functions.
Azure Functions.
I feel like it's like the top of the pin.
There you go. And so we hit App Service and now Azure Functions. Yeah. So Azure Functions is an event-driven application model. So super cool stuff, right? It is, and I was just playing with it because I'm going to be demoing this tomorrow.
Okay.
Where if you have some part of your app that the computation is strictly based on action. So you said, I'm spinning up my cat website. Okay.
No, my friend.
Your friend is.
Sure.
And we should talk. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, in private.
It's okay.
About the technology.
You've got the website. You've got it running on app service. But you have pictures coming in.
Yeah.
And the pictures coming in, and you want to go resize those pictures, make little thumbnails, right? So that's event-driven. Picture comes in, you want to do something, right? And so with functions, what you can do is picture drops into blob storage, event, functions fires, resize the image, and away you go, right? And that's it. You use this much compute to be able to do that based on that operation that needed to happen at that exact moment.
Because I know, like, my friend's family, or my friend's family, they have a lot of family
cat
members
pictures
that have issues, and you're saying that all of a sudden they upload all 1,000 of them because they each have like 1,000.
It'll fly her off, yep. And so you can do this with a queue, right? You can actually put things into a queue. Mm-hmm. You can make it time-based, so you can make it, like you said, a cron job like that. Or you can make it fully event-based. Something happens in storage, go. Something happens in Event Hub. It's really popular with IoT, actually, as it turns out.
Interesting.
Yeah. So something fires. You've got, let's say, a car that maybe says, hey, we noticed something, fire. It will then say, oh, I better go call the customer or something. That type of event, that type of reaction can be done with Azure Functions.
So we've talked about a couple of events. You talked about an event based upon pushing something in the blob storage.
Yep.
You talked about an event based upon something in a queue.
Yes.
What are some of the other ones?
So event store is another good one. So that's sort of the IoT pipeline, right? Something comes in through the event store and boom, away you go. Storage queue, so storage can be blob or table, right? So all of those end up being sort of good ones. You can also just actually hook it up to sort of an event-based system, right? So you can hook it up to like a webhooks type system and actually have that directly fire off as well. So you can do that. So any sort of option, right? Someone clicks a button on a website, boom.
And it's funny because, like, there's certain functionality that you just need to do this one thing.
I get it. Functionality. This guy.
I'm going. I'm like all this, up.
There's a certain
up.
Azure functionality.
No, I mean, let's just say there's something you got to do. You don't have to re-architect your entire system.
No.
You can literally just say, oh, when that thing goes in the queue, we already do that. People now want to do X.
Yep.
Just Azure function it, boom.
Exactly. And again, you're only using that super tiny amount of compute. And so that's all you need to do. So
Golden Eyes is giving me like a star signal.
I don't know.
We're
awesome.
Is that like 5 minutes?
Aren't we so great? Jazz hands.
She went like this to us.
Those aren't jazz hands, Golden Eyes.
Does this mean we're talking too much?
These are jazz hands.
Nice. Hold on, she messaged me too. Hold on.
Okay, hold on. We've got important things. This was a wonderful conversation.
You
until
do
that.
Smell like a cat. This wow. is my friend, Golnaz. It's my friend. It's my friend.
It's my
so
friend.
We have about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
That's what
you were saying.
That's what the
five,
jazz
five.
Hand. That was the jazz
five,
hand.
Five.
How can someone sort of get a feel for, okay, I'm convinced. I got to do stuff in the
yeah.
cloud. I have my option between VM, between containers, between container services, between Azure Service Fabric,
yeah.
between functions, app
yes.
service, and
yes.
blah, blah, blah. We've kind of gone through the choose your own adventure here.
Indeed.
How do they sort of get a feel for how to get started?
Yeah, well, I mean, so if you've taken a look and you've played with some of these services and you've decided which ones you want to go sort of mess with, you just go into the portal, sign up for a free account if you're not already a member of the Azure family, and get going, right? You pick your service and you go. That easy.
And I mean, how much is it going to cost you to do it?
Well, the free account costs you nothing, hence the name.
Is that why you call it the free
That's
account?
That's why we call it free account. I mean, it's confusing.
I feel like I'm learning a lot here today.
Well, you're learning more than you should be learning.
Yeah.
Let's be clear on that
Sign
point.
Sign up for the free account, apparently.
So, yeah,
what
that's
saying.
Right. So, so you can get started. And the key thing is this, you can go to each one of these services I mentioned, right? If you want to spin up a couple VMs and get going, you want to spin up a container service, launch a few containers. Very, very easy, very fun.
So I'm mostly excited about Service Fabric, but I feel like how do I even test it? Is there a way? Like,
yeah.
Obviously, the container is going to spin up all these things
yeah.
in the cloud.
Well, Service Fabric's very simple to
but
test.
But how do I do it on local?
You can do Service Fabric testing locally, fully integrated with Visual Studio. So Visual Studio's got deep integration with Service Fabric. Visual Studio's got deep integration with Docker containers, deep integration with web apps, function support. I mean, come on, man. We got it.
So in Visual Studio.
You got it.
I can go in there and be like, hey, I have 15 microservices.
Exactly. You'll see that in my demo tomorrow, presumably.
15 microservices?
I think I'm showing.
Well, I
yeah.
try not to watch anything you do. I mean, just to.
okay. Well. Thanks. Oh, are we not done?
No, not yet. No, I'm just kidding.
This interview is over.
Listen, where's my publicist?
This interview is over.
No, I mean, but that's cool because I think the barrier to entry to distributed systems is that. They're distributed systems, right? There's some crazy like quorum election.
This is why garbage. This is why you got local debugging, you got local monitoring, you've got a local, and it's not even a simulator emulator. It's the actual Service Fabric SDK running and the code running on your local box, running the app. So it's the exact experience that you're going to see.
What kind of witch doctory is this? Are you spinning up VMs and doing exactly that?
No. Because actually Service Fabric can run very simply with just processes. So.
Oh, so you're emulating.
You've learned so much today.
I feel like I know something.
Even if no one is watching out there, this has been valuable just to
it's
teach you
literally
a few things.
Spilling out of my ears right now.
It is not literally spilling out
no,
of anything.
No, according
on
to
you.
The Oxford Dictionary, it is literally
spilling
out of my ears.
You are using this word incorrectly, and I hope that they correct you when they translate.
Oh, my goodness. So let's talk about, you do some shows. Hopefully we'll record one later tonight. Tell us about your
yeah,
show.
Yeah, so I do some shows. They're called Tuesdays with Corey. You can find me on Twitter at hashtag AzureTWC. That's short for Tuesdays with Corey, and we do these shows, we publish them every week on Tuesday, if you can imagine that. And we do little 3 to 5 minute little shows talking about the platform. Typically, they're a little bit, if you can imagine, a little bit hokey, a little bit funny.
No, you know? Nothing you do, I imagine, would be hokey.
Yeah. Yeah, you won't be invited on the show, but
I'm actually recording one here. Hopefully.
Oh, we are recording one.
Yeah.
Right. Just, is it you and me, or are you just recording?
I'm just gonna record.
You're behind the camera.
I'm behind the camera.
The way I like
can
it.
Can we
do it with actually? Golnaz and I should do it. You should be behind the camera.
Yeah,
I think that's
we'll have Golnaz be in there. We never put her on camera.
No, I know. She should. Tuesdays with
Corey
is gonna change all that.
It's gonna change
okay,
all that. And can you give us a little teaser, or maybe what you might talk about?
I actually don't know. We haven't figured it out, frankly. Do we know what we're talking about tonight?
Golnaz, what are we talking about?
What are we talking about tonight? Here's what we're talking about. We're talking about our beautiful, wonderful trip to Lima, Peru.
I think it's great. We are going to wrap up here because
ceviche.
This is so much good stuff. We can't broadcast. The bits can't contain.
We've literally exploded the wires
Thank
that
you.
Are sending the video of this.
The awesome Corey Sanders. Thanks for being with us.
Of course,
my name is Seth Juarez. We're here in Lima, Peru for Dev Days 2016. We'll see you around the flip side with... Alex Le Bienvenu, hopefully, if he's here. He is here. And we're going to talk about stuff in Spanish. It's going to be great.
Thank you.